I think some of the things that really impressed me was that he loves family gatherings, and I think when you really get into the church, that's what it's all about. He loves all kinds of adventures, not only spiritual things, but conceptual, conversational, laughter, chess, letter writing. I thought, gosh, if anybody needs a pen pal, we'll see if he really likes letter writing. He has 7 children. My, 1 girl, 1 daughter, and 6 sons, 5 grandchildren. He presently is single, and he shares an apartment in the first ward with his nephew, David, who's 27. Oh, I have a daughter, 25. We may have more in common. Spiritual, he has sung in California, Arizona, Utah, Oregon, Washington, Missouri, Canada, Russia, Ukrainian. Programs include opera, folk songs, spirituals, show tunes, and ballads. And we're just honored to have you here. And if there's anything else that you feel like you would like to share with us, please do. But I'm turning the time over to you right now. Thank you, Eugene.
Well, I'm delighted to be here tonight, if I can survive the equipment. When Judy asked me to do this, I was kind of excited by it because it allowed me to reflect on some things that I had not done, and since you are, this is the homemaking meeting, it allowed me to think about what home means. If I were to ask you what you think about when you think about homeland, what do you think about? What do you feel when you think of that word? Is it a place for you? Is it a state of being? Maybe you can say something about what would you?
It's a feeling in my heart, homeland. It's like the country is my homeland, but Missouri was my birthplace, but California is my life. Mm-hmm. And so I'm connected in so many areas.
That's what you think of. Anybody else have something similar or different?
That home is a place of peace. Okay. It's a state of being. You could be with great music, say in Russia, and that would be home, even though you're a California girl.
Well, thank you. I think that sort of sets the mood and the idea for what I want to talk about, because I want to share with you what that means to me and my search, my experience with what that word homeland has meant to me and has changed. And I'm going to be talking about some of these little pictures back here, this picture which sort of captures some things. But I want to start first by singing you a song about that comes from Tennessee about 1830. And you know what happened in our culture in 1830. So this sort of captures what some folks back then were feeling.
I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world of woe. And there's no sickness, no toil, no danger in that bright land to where I go. I'm going there to see my father. I'm going there no more to roam. I'm just a going over Jordan. I'm just a going over home. I I know dark clouds will gather round me. I know my way is rough and steep, but golden fields lie just beyond me, and souls redeemed no longer sleep. I'm going there to see my mother. She said she'd meet me when I come. I'm just a coming over Jordan. I'm just a coming over home. I'm just a coming over Jordan. I'm just a coming over home. So
that's home back then. Let me now share a word with you, a Russian word that I've heard all my life. Come on in. Bishop. This is a word I've heard all my life. Although I didn't speak Russian as a boy, I've never not known this word. I've heard it spoken by my father. The word is Rodina, and it means homeland. And I got used to my dad, every time he spoke that word, going off inside himself in some far-off place, and his eyes would mist over, and he would go into some special place way away. And he implanted that nostalgic sense into his two sons, my brother and me, and you can't talk to a Russian, you can't say that word to a Russian, natural word, Russian born, and not have him have a reaction or have something special happen to him. My dad was born and raised in Ukraine of a Ukrainian father and a Russian mother. He fought in the Civil War after the Russian Revolution of 1917, jumped ship in 1922 in Boston, entered this country, learned English by reading Zane Grey Westerns, came out west to become a cowboy, became a Mormon in Salt Lake City, and then met my mother in Phoenix, Arizona, where he married her. She comes from old Mormon pioneer stock and originally from England. So I have those kinds of mixtures in me. And so I would like now to share with you some adventures and misadventures about following my feeling about Rodina and my attempts to locate and satisfy this perpetual yearning that I learned from my dad. I suspect many of you have romantic ideas about Russians like I once had. Ideas like scary communists, heroic Cossacks, and passionate lovers. So here's a song about heroics. It's a esprit de corps song. It's one I've known a long time. It's a song about working men working and singing together to keep their spirits up. And it's called the Song of the Volga Boatman. You probably have heard that before. But most people have a tendency to associate this with Old Man River. This is not the Russian equivalent of Old Man River, which is a song of complaint. This is not a song of complaint. So if you can imagine the river off in the distance, you're coming, you're hearing these guys working, so it's very faint, and they're pulling the boats, having a great time. Pull those boats, bravely fellows. We're walking along the bank, the river. The trees are growing along the river. There's the sun is shining on the river, Mother River, wide and deep. Be brave. Keep your spirits up and mind your business. And then it gets very loud as they come closer and closer to the bend of the river, where we're sitting. And then they go off in the distance and fade away, still singing about what they're doing. So that's all the song's about. Are you ready? Hey, ooh, honey, еще раз и к еще раз. Эй, ухнем, еще раз и к еще раз. Разобьем мы березу, разобьем мы кудряву. Ай да, разобьем мы кудряву. Разобьем мы кудряву. Эй, ухнем, еще раз и к еще раз. Мы по бережку идем, песню солнышку поем. Ай да, песню солнышку поем. Эй, тяни-ка над смелей, песню солнышку поем. Эй, ухнем, еще раз и к еще раз. Эхо ты, Волга, мать река, широка и глубока. Ай да, широка и глубока. Эй, что нам всего милее, Волга, мать река. Эй, ухнем, еще раз, еще раз. Эй, ухнем, еще раз, еще раз. Эй, ухнем. Here's a song about passionate love. You've all heard of Dark Eyes.
Очи черные, очи ясные, очи жгучие и прекрасные. Лишь увидел вас, потерял покой, и весь мир забыт для ее одной. Eyes of fire and dew, eyes of darkest hue, how I thrill with love and of fear with you. All love's beautiful day passed in tears away just because of you. Eyes of fire and dew, la 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 la. La 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 la. Очи черные, очи жгучие и прекрасные, и прекрасные. Как люблю я вас, как хочу я вас. Очи черные, ты мой радость.
And here's some words to a song by Rachmaninoff. That's a song about singers. It's called I Am Not a Prophet. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a warrior. I'm not a teacher of the world. I'm only, by the grace of God, a singer. My weapon is the lyre. I try to do God's will and in song speak to the heart and try to light the spark of God. Я не пророк, я не боец, я не учитель мира.
Я волю Господа творю, союза избегая с ложью. Я сердце песней говорю, бужу в нем искру Божию.
My journey to Rodina started when I took a Russian class at BYU. Long time ago, about 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then I joined the army and was trained as a Russian interpreter and was eventually sent to Berlin on an intelligence assignment to help save America from the communists. I didn't quite make it to Russia, but after the army I returned to school and took a doctorate in material science, thinking I could get to Russia and Rodina by doing some postdoctoral research there. However, that plan didn't materialize either, and so I became a nuclear material scientist instead. And that set me up for a terrible inner conflict, and I almost died. Something was terribly, terribly wrong. I went into a postdoctoral depression and had no idea what was going on. And about 4.5 months later, my father died, and I snapped out of the depression at once and felt that my spiritual work was about to begin. I didn't realize it then, but my physical journey to Rodina began to change to a spiritual search. After Dad died, I began having powerful, life-changing spiritual experiences, including new scientific insights. And that led to an invitation from the director of the newly formed Foundation for Research on the Nature of Man in Durham, North Carolina, to join his research staff. And inspired by the vision he offered me, I wrote my first poem to express feelings that I had never before felt. Pilgrim. He stands upon a hill surrounded by a mountain, trembling, yearns for truth to ponder. Storm and change obscure the summit's view, yet he dares to hope its height as get thee up seems whispered. Smiling, turns toward quest to plunge. Uncertain strains keep ringing in his ears. Then he glimpses through the clouds while Rodina stays waiting, knowing finds clear trump to sound. Well, shortly after writing Pilgrim, I had a puzzling dream, which I learned later, was on Joseph Smith's birthday, December 23rd, 1964. And I want to share that dream with you. I dreamed I was a beautiful woman with a bad reputation, always being taken advantage of and running from angry, jealous husbands and wives and hiding under a house. I was dressed in a t-shirt and Levi's and frightened. And the scene then changed to the temple, where as I was there with my briefcase. I was always carrying a briefcase. Another woman was standing nearby and told me that when my time comes to be defended, no one will be there to defend me. That dream blew my mind. What's that all about? Had no idea. No idea at all. But it was a powerful experience, and I wondered what was going on. I began to have a glimpse of that meaning about a month later when I was reading the scriptures, and in reading 3 Nephi 22, read in verse 6, "For the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit when thou wast refused." Now, I have never had the scriptures speak to me so powerfully as when I read that scripture. And it just moved me like I've never, ever been moved before by the scriptures. And that began an experience with that scripture, 3 Nephi 22, and over the years, I've had a love affair with that particular chapter. And it has unfolded line by line, word by word, over many, many years in very interesting and strange and different ways. I suppose lots of people have their own experience with scriptures, but this was mine. And it made and gave me a sense of meaning that I had not felt. And it gave me a sense of meaning of that dream. Something in me, here I was a scientist, moving, but something was not right inside. I had prostituted myself in the work I was doing and had not understood and realized. Something powerfully needed to be adjusted. So my professional life was beginning to escalate, but my inner life was in trouble. So, you know, I told you about the pilgrim. How do you get from hilltop to mountaintop? You go down, right? So that's what began to happen to me. In my descent, I got the opportunity for the new foundation aborted as my professional and ecclesiastical relationships became conflicted with spiritual issues. And I wrote my second poem called Night. The North is silent. Uneasy lull awaits as darkness gathers. Dry rot unseen in lofty places. Unshored structures hid by blackness. Sand and stone appear as one. Who beckons travelers? Whose voice is clear? Why are the sounds unsure? Gusts disturb this tortured sleep. Words in flooded streams still rage, and desperation strips my soul before abyss or hope. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. A long way from my home, a long way from my home. Well, those were tough days. Remember the storm clouds in those first poems? Mm-hmm. Lots of storms, upheavals, earthquakes came into my life. There were spectacular highs and wrenching lows. It was as if God was shaking me loose from a tenacious grip of a rigid, misdirected life. My losses included everything I'd ever held dear. Family, church, reputation, career, security, money, friends, you name it, I lost it. Everything, that is, except my faith in and personal relationship with God. And those were great and dreadful days. They were the tumultuous 60s. And here are some poems and songs from that time. Here's a poem called Inversion. Walls and windows, friends and faith fail to change the scene from mirror irony. At first, when low, was disbelief. And now, when high, it is again. The record shows the purpose. Mysterious ways are hid from view, except to one who knows. The work demands a strict review. Mercy cannot rob it. Others' faith is quit this time, to prove this one himself. At last will come the final meaning, when lowness claims its own. And here's a song that some of you may remember, called The Windmills of Your Mind.
Round like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning on a never spinning reel, like a snowball down a mountain or a carnival balloon, like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon, like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face, and the world is like an apple whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. Like a tunnel that you follow to a tunnel of its own, down a hollow to a cavern where the sun has never shone. Like a door that keeps revolving in a half-forgotten dream, or the ripples from a pebble someone tosses in a stream. Like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face, and the world is like an apple whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. Keys that jingle in your pocket, words that jangle in your head. Why did summer so quickly? Was it something that you said? Lovers walk along a shore and leave their footprints in the sand. Is the sound of distant drumming just the fingers of your hand? Pictures hanging in a hallway and the fragments of a song. Half-remembered names and faces, but to whom do they belong? When you knew that it was over, were you suddenly aware that the autumn leaves were turning to the color of her hair? Like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning on an ever-spinning reel, as the images unwind, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind.
And here's a poem that was once a letter. I had just entered the forest, was in the forest my first week of a seven-year wilderness period. And I wrote this letter to some friends I just met who were also fellow dropouts. And they were in reaction to the establishment, and they wanted to know what I believed. So because they shared their last $2 with me to buy something to eat, I didn't have a cent. I wrote this letter to them, and I've always liked it. I call it As If Time Existed. It's a credo. I've tried to say what I believed in words that didn't trigger prejudices. So I tried to get away from cliches. We shall speak of time as if it existed, not in terms of the rotation of planets or of stars, but in terms of experience, a sequence of events or circumstances. Experience is our only reality, and knowledge of reality is truth, that is, knowledge of that which was, is, and will be. We are personalities, each distinctly unique and different from any other, caught in a set of circumstances not outside our own choosing and undergoing experience. We individually are responsible for the choices we are free to make, always have been, and always will be. We find ourselves in a setting called the cosmos, a system of space and energy and mind governed by natural law. It is our task to learn this law by experience, according to the choices we make. Success brings joy, failure brings sorrow. A complete knowledge of cosmic law brings freedom from bondage to it, as well as complete harmony among personalities who remain unique, who have also been successful. They experience then a fullness of joy, yet are nevertheless forever learning by forever experiencing. Just as our personality forever will be, so it always has been. But most of us are not aware, are not conscious of our having always been, though it is difficult, if not impossible, to imagine extinction or nothingness or never being. Before this present set of circumstances, we are involved, all of us, in planning and preparing and achieving experience to ready us for what we call the present, just as our present activity and experience prepare us for the future. But we have little, if any, knowledge of this future, and we have little, if any, knowledge of this past. Our awareness, for the most part, then, is short range. This is by design. It was our choice. However, there are some who, because of special appointment and special experience, are given to know the future and the past to a greater extent in order to make the consequences of choice clear to any who decide to be genuinely interested in progressively freeing experience. These appointments have existed throughout all ages. Coercion or insistence has never and will never be associated with genuine appointment. The ultimate decision for individual action rests only with the individual personality, never with an institution or some other individual. A lack of respect for this principle has been central whenever there have been contentions among humankind, whether individuals or nations. These are still those songs from that period. I'm still going down, down here.
There is a balm in Gilead that makes the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. Sometimes I get discouraged and think my work in vain. But then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again. There is a balm in Gilead that makes the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. To heal the sin-sick soul.
And then at the bottom, another poem, which I call Orfeo. Restless sea seeks sound on rocks outside my window. Flaming mountain, cooled by gentle laps, descends to glow in darkness. Pulsing smoothly neath its surface, creatures flow, themselves unseen, to play to wind on wave a game of ancient order. I smile in wonder, watching song, with eyes upended, knowing now a day will come when sea and me will be as one. Well, I had dropped out of the world as I knew it and began a new life in the wilderness with a new family, a new reality, and I almost forgot about Rodina. But then I had a dream, and the dream renewed my vision. And I want to share this dream with you. I had this dream on May 4th, 1967. I dreamed I was in a forest. Like Big Sur, have you been to Big Sur? Pine, cypress in the background, and so forth. And as I stood there alone in a clearing, an older woman came up to me. I didn't know who she was, but just the way she carried herself, the way she walked, spoke wisdom and high calling. And she spoke to me in English, but with a Russian accent. And she says, "Ah, I thought I recognized you. I heard you sing long ago and was most impressed. And I hope I hear you sing again," she said. And I didn't know what to say, so I didn't say anything. And I stood there, and other people began coming into the clearing. These were older men. I didn't know who they were either, but as they walked, I could tell just the way they carried themselves. They also walked with wisdom and high calling. And they came up to me and they introduced themselves and shook my hand one by one. And I heard whispers from a crowd that had gathered in the meantime. "Oh, that's so-and-so, and that's so-and-so, and that's the great Toynbee, and that's so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so." Toynbee is the only name I remember. And then everybody went away, and I'm standing alone in the clearing again, and I hear the sound I have never heard before or since, of a trumpet, two tones. In the descending fourth, like in the song Born Free. And those tones were started off very pianissimo. They were so pure, so golden, so incredible. And they grew and they grew and they grew until they filled the sky and they reverberated from horizon to horizon like thunder in the distance. And I woke up in the middle of this glorious sound. "Oh, what is this? Is this Mother Russia asking me to sing to her? Is this a calling? Who's blowing those horns? Is that Gabriel and Moroni with a duet? What's going on here? No, no." But it was a wonderful experience, and I wrote it down as I had been doing for years, wrote that dream down, kept them religiously, put it away in my journal. I began to take that seriously about a month later, when Arnold Toynbee, the great English historian, whom I knew nothing about at the time, the dream, a month earlier, spoke to my alma mater in Salt Lake City about the need for Russia and America to make a positive relationship for the sake of the world. And if we didn't get it together, we had had it, and the blood was on the heads of our two countries. For me to find that out just blew me away. And the dream was saying, "Pay attention, pay attention." So I thought, whoa, I better not ignore this. I better find out what's going on. And I'm going to sing to every Russian I can find. So that gave me new direction. And I began to figure out some way I had lots of stuff to work out. I was still in the forest down like that. And things were happening, and I needed still to mellow out and work things out and wonder about stuff. But eventually, I came out of the forest, and I was precisely the age that Joseph Smith was when he died. And that was interesting to me, The synchronicity of that evoked my wonder, and this was the song I sang in a Newport Beach ward conference the day that I had that realization. This was on May 21st, 1972. Steal away. And you listen for the sounds. The words are so meaningful to me from what I've just shared with you. Steal away. Steal away. Steal away to Jesus. Steal away. Steal away home. I ain't got long to stay here. Steal away. Steal away, steal away to Jesus. Steal away home. I ain't got long to stay here. My Lord, he calls me by the thunder. The trumpet sounds within my soul. I ain't got long to stay here. Steal away, steal away. Steal away to Jesus. Steal away home. I ain't got long to stay here. I ain't got long to stay here. I ain't got long to stay here. Well, the next year I made it to Russia finally, in the role this time of a businessman and a representative of the governor of Oregon.
Не слышны саду даже шорохи. Все здесь замерло до утра. Если знали бы, как мне дороги подмосковные вечера. Если знали бы, как мне дороги подмосковные вечера. Балалайка, play, play my favorite song. Let me find again lost delights. Play my melody that brings back to me memories of those Moscow nights. Play my melody that brings back to me memories of those Moscow nights. Не слышны в саду даже шорохи. Все здесь замерло до утра. Если знали бы, как мне дороги подмосковные вечера. Если знали бы, как мне дороги подмосковные вечера.
Before I left Moscow for the first time, and I was to be back many times after, I had to capture my first impressions of what I thought then was Rodina. There's where I am now. My pilgrimage at last complete. The mount is climbed. Dark clouds once far above glide silently below. To my surprise, this peak is broad. A castle's built upon it, and swords to plowshares near an ancient fortress makes me cry. But so many here before me, some with words of virtue, more with sounds of greed. Do they dilute my quest? Or is this not the place I seek, where golden tones once pierced my sleep? Has she I met so long ago not heard my song, nor know I've come? Such foolish youthful questions. I return unto my own to wait an outer answer, and if my hope is true, I'll come again next time to inner chambers. There's a picture I want to show you. Did you hear this image in this poem? I'll pass that around. When I saw that statue in the Tretyakov Gallery near the ancient fortress, the Kremlin, it was big time and I just sat down and bawled. You see, Kovalenko means blacksmith, shoer of horses, smith, blacksmith. And there is my whole sense of self right there in that image. It blew me away. He did it to me. And my favorite song, my favorite Russian folk song I'm going to sing right now. Before I sing it, though, I would like to tell you my favorite story about it. I was there as a businessman this first time, representing Governor McCall and setting up a trade mission for Oregon, state of Oregon. And I was in the bottom, the big lower floor of the Leningrad Hotel in Moscow. And I don't know who of you have been to Moscow, but these grotesque hotels, but this one, Stalinist architecture, this is weird, horrible stuff. Anyway, this huge, huge first floor was full of different kinds of desks where they did a lot of work. You know, the in-tourist desk and the money exchange and the taxis and the chauffeurs and the theater and all those things. There were about 75 or 80 people milling around doing different things, standing in line, doing that sort of stuff. And as I'm standing up, facing this girl at the in-tourist desk, just trying to unsnarl some red tape. In-tourist is always in red tape, at least it was. She looks over to me and she speaks to me in Russian. She says, "I think you're opera singer." And I said, "How did you know?" She said, "Well, I just felt it." Well, I said, well, Russian people are very intuitive. How would you like a song? Oh, how wonderful. When could this be? How about right now? So I closed my eyes and sang this song. And when I finish it, I will tell you what happened. This is my favorite story about this favorite song. There are some in this audience who have heard this before. It's about a tree, a birch tree, that stands in a meadow in a Russian forest. A young man goes into this forest, sees the tree, is inspired by it, cuts a branch from it, makes three whistles out of twigs and a balalaika from the rest of the branch, which he serenades his sweetheart with.
В опале береза стояла, в опале кудрявая стояла, люли-люли стояла, люли-люли стояла. Пойду я в лес погуляю, белую березу заломаю, люли-люли заломаю, люли-люли заломаю. Срежу с березы три пурточка, сделаю себе я три гудочка, люли-люли три гудочка. Люли-люли три гудочка. Четвертую балалайку милому родному на забавку. Люли-люли на забавку. Люли-люли на забавку. Да, в опале береза стояла, в опале кудрявая стояла, люли-люли стояла, люли-люли стояла.
When I opened my eyes, everybody had stopped working, and they'd all gathered around the big circle, and they started shouting, and they clapped, and they stomped their feet, and they were whistling, and they were doing all kinds of things. And one man came up to me and said, "My God," he said, "who are you? Here from Bulgaria on tour? We didn't even know you were in town." Love that. Love that. Well, my Soviet liaison business eventually collapsed, and I was forced to come back to my American home. Nevertheless, something was still not quite right. I still hadn't found what I was looking for and became restless. And here is a story about how I felt at that time, and I call this the fugitive half-breed Russian bear. And I started off with a quote from Dr. Zhivago by Boris Pasternak. If the beast who sleeps in man could be held down by threats, any kind of threat, whether of jail or of retribution after death, then the highest emblem of humanity would be the lion tamer in the circus with his whip, not the prophet who sacrificed himself. But don't you see, this is just the point. What has for centuries raised man above the beast is not the cudgel, but an inward music, the irresistible power of unarmed truth, the powerful attraction of its example. A half honey brown, half Russian black bear was born in a local circus. He was trained to perform tricks and became an audience favorite. One day, while traveling through the forest, the circus train was stopped by robbers, and many cages were open, animals let loose to cover the robbers' getaway. The half-breed Russian bear escaped into the wilderness and learned to survive by relying on his natural instincts. Years later, an animal trainer saw the bear in the forest. Knowing honey was the bear's delight, the trainer used it to coax the curious beast back into the circus. Are you getting this? The half-breed Russian bear remembered some of his circus tricks and again became an audience favorite. Difficulties arose, however, when the trainer tried to return the bear to a cage. Forest living had developed its wild streak and its love for being free. And because he sometimes frightened people unexpectedly, the bear was finally let go near a forest in a valley dotted with beehives. The bear soon became a menace to the local villages. Too clever to be caged, but too tame for the forest, the bear had learned that when hungry, he could take his fill of honey simply by opening any hive at will. And he was immune to the outrage of the bees. The villagers became alarmed and wondered what to do about the bear. A council of village elders was called and prayers were offered up. And it was decided to send for an old native medicine man wise to the ways of bears and forest creatures. Just as the bear was about to assault another hive, the old man came and began to hum a low, soft chant from the legends of his people. Interrupted at his point of mischief, the bear became enchanted by the ancient song and its magical tones. And so long as the wise man sang in his mystical way, the bear remained enraptured and subdued. The people were grateful and gave thanks. Soon youths from nearby villages came to visit the wise old mystic and learn the chant-like song he sang for the bear. The song quickly spread throughout the valley, sung by younger singers, singing as the old man taught. And so long as the song was sung in the native way, true to the truth of the ancient ways, the bear stayed peaceful and calm and once again performed his circus tricks. The villagers and beasts began to enjoy each other's company and learn about each other's natural ways. And the half-wild, half-honey-brown, half-Russian-black bear didn't have to live in a cage ever again. About that time, I was looking for creative partners to share my journey, and I thought I'd finally found someone who was right for me. But she was on the other side of the world. One day she called from Stockholm to say she was flying over for a brief visit, and I became excited and frightened. Although the visit did not materialize, I had set my feelings into verse before the plans changed. I call this poem "For Oceana from the North." 3 days or for a lifetime, which now will it be? Your call evokes my wonder in new life beneath the sea. Oceana, do you call me from within or from without? Are you like the ancient siren come to conquer me with doubt? I need eternal partners to help with creative work and not another mistress who can only see herself. Will you help me love my people as I try to serve them well, though they may never ever see me in ways I can never tell? I need you to believe in me in spite of craziness. Yes, that's a monstrous challenge with no promises for bliss. But if grace will smile on us, I know I can commit for the rest of this short lifetime, not another grand exit. Well, at least I got a poem out of it. 8 years later, my brother and I began preparing to visit Ukraine to find our grandfather's grave. And I wrote a poem of anticipation, which is also in your program. And I call this poem "Rodina." We of your exiled sons come seeking roots beyond our Celtic ones and older silent fears. Like Viking guests with Slavic souls, we seek now whole new worlds to heal our blindness. We would learn of you and sing new songs. The idea of singing on the grave of my grandfather and on the grave of Shevchenko was planted in my mind way back in Moscow days in 1973. I was performing for a group of Soviet artists, and one of them was an old writer of children's stories. And when he heard me sing this song that I'm going to sing to you, this Ukrainian folk song, he said, "Oh, it's old school. It's old school. We don't have singers sing like this no more these days." And he says, "You will come with me to Ukraine. You will sing this song on Shevchenko's grave. All Ukrainians will cry." Well, Shevchenko was a contemporary of Joseph Smith. And he was the great patriot. He almost single-handedly gave the Ukrainian soul the sense of identity because of his talent. He was born a serf, won his freedom because of his great talent, and gave the sense of identity to the Ukrainian people. And they represent, the Ukrainian spirit is an independent, fierce, independent soul. And you can see in the world today, Ukraine is making some ripples and not letting Big Brother Russia push him around anymore. And you don't call Ukrainians Russians, but I'm half-breed in that regard. So here's the song that I learned on the beach in Malibu by a Ukrainian girlfriend who taught me this song and then helped me translate it. And the translation is my own, and the challenge was to translate it so that the words, the English words, match the Ukrainian words at the same tone with the same meaning and still be poetic and rhyming. Now, that was an interesting experience. But it worked the first. I couldn't do it with any of the other verses, but I could do it with the first one.
Дивлюсь я на небо, та й думку гадаю. Чому я не сокіл, чому не літаю? Чому ж я, не Боже, ти крилець не дав? Я б землю покину, та й в небо взлітав. I look to the heavens, my thoughts go a-wandering. Why am I not falcon? Why can I not fly? And why did not God give me wings to try? I'd fly from this sad earth and into the sky. Дивлюсь я на небо, та й думку гадаю. Чому я не сокіл? Чому ж не літаю? Чому ж мені, Боже, ти крилець не дав? Я б землю покину, та й в небо взлітав. Чому ж мені, Боже, ти крилець не дав? Я б землю покину, та й в небо взлітав.
So I sang that song on Shevchenko's grave. It's wonderful. Finally, my brother and I went there, and we did it, and we saw, we went to our father's homeland. We went, we saw, and we were conquered. It was springtime, the most beautiful time of the year, and Kyiv was in its natural splendor. Endless chestnut trees in full bloom, and the mighty regal Dnieper River flowing freely through the city. It was also the millennial anniversary of the Christian conversion of the Russian Empire in Kiev. And I wrote my last poem for you called Lyhonograd to celebrate being finally in a very special place. This is, and of course, I don't need to explain the word Lyhonograd to a Mormon audience, but of course, to a non-Mormon audience, I need to say that the Lyhona, as you know, is a very special device, and that appears in the Book of Mormon. It operates as a sort of a mystical director that has images that appear on its surface when the family is in harmony. And of course, nothing on the surface when the family is not in harmony. You're left to your own devices. Well, I love that image. I've always loved that image. And so for me, this is Lyhonograd. At first sight, I knew this is the place, and all else faded. More than ancient beauty, far more than all I've seen before, her verdant flowing gown with boundless candles blazing, wrapped wide in azure sash and crowned by golden domes. More than ancient peace, so oft reduced these thousand years by eastern hordes and western swords, yet bustling now with crowds of faces shining. It was the quiet awe that crept into, then swept my soul, as standing rooted there, I saw those gray-green hills, the primal three reborn, who will not, must not die. Enlightened, lovely one, when I'm with you and sing my song, I know you hear my home, and I will know yours better when I come again, and yet again, and many times again. I had to go physically to Ukraine to learn that my deeper search was not over there, but in here. I came home from Rodina with Lyhonograd in my heart. The yearning was still there, but now it was transformed. I discovered that my most important journey was not across the seas, but a journey inward. Homeland had become Rodina, Rodina had become Lyhonograd, and Lyhonograd changed from an outer place to an inner state. My search became an eternal one, and I'm only now beginning to feel at home in a timeless, spaceless place. So also am I eager to encounter and commune with others who know or wish to know this place. My point in all this, my dear sisters and brothers, is that we are all on a journey home, and our most meaningful journey is not out there someday. Rather, it is in here right now. And may we enjoy each other in sharing our personal stories, is my hope. And let us dare to discover and share our eternal selves and search with each other. And as an epilogue, I want to tell you about the Relief Society in Long Beach and my friends from Kiev, an ex-Soviet family I've known about 5 years. They just have come from Kiev last October. Mother Lisa is Jewish. Volodya, the father, is Russian Orthodox. Their son, Igor, is a surgeon who loves basketball and the Lakers. Igor's wife, Natasha, is also a medical doctor specializing in eyes, ears, nose, and throat. And their little grandson, Dima, is 20 months, loves to say hi, and as well as Zdrastite. So the Long Beach Relief Society, through the help of my mother and other church friends, have taken this family under its wing to help them rise to their full potential in our society. Their coming here last October makes me feel like everything is, after all, on time, in the world, and in the universe, despite illusory diversions. It feels like inner and outer generations have come together in full circle, and that each is beginning to see and recognize the other. So, Art, I sing my last song for you called The Impossible Dream.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
Thank you for inviting me to share my eternal home with you in yours.